If I were a rich man, yabba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dum. All day long I bidi-bidi-bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. Yabba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dum. If I were a bidi-bidi-rich, idle-diddle-diddle-diddle-man, I'd...
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Julian Zelizer, who's a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He's a regular contributor to CNN.com and Politico and has written for The New York Times and The Washington Post. His most recent books include Jimmy Carter, Arsenal of Democracy, The Presidency of George W. Bush, and his latest book is Governing America, The Revival of Political History. He has an article at CNN, Campaign 2012, The Phony War of Markets versus Government. Welcome to Background Briefing, Julian Zelizer.
Thanks for having me.
And clearly this is a, at least, I guess if Mitt Romney has his way, he'll make this the central issue of the campaign. Anything but talking about his taxes and his tenure at Bain Capital. Is that too cynical?
Yes, I think it's cynical, but it's also, it's correct. I think Mitt Romney originally wanted to make this campaign about his business record. The president has clearly been able to turn this against him. And I think right now Romney's trying to shift and to try to figure out a way to reframe this debate to put it back more on Obama's record and the kind of ideology he represents.
But it's what he's doing, though, is something that he's done from day one. The first commercial that he made in Iowa when he was running against Republicans was not against any Republican challenger, but against Barack Obama. And he put essentially John McCain's words in Obama's mouth. Obama was quoting something that McCain had said in the 2008 campaign, old footage from then, and then he put it out as though Obama was making the statement, which was damaging. It seems to me that that's what he's been doing all along in this latest commercial that he's essentially, they are Obama's words, but they're entirely out of context about how much infrastructure has contributed towards private enterprise.
Yes, I mean, I think there's a two-front strategy. The first, Romney has very clearly just come back to the theme of look at where the economy is, and then to blame the president for where the economy is and to raise questions about his policies. The second is to paint him as a quote-unquote big government liberal and to use quotes and statements such as we just saw recently to suggest that President Obama doesn't respect the market economy and that ultimately he believes in some kind of centralized, you know, command and control economy. And I think those are the two themes. The one thing about Mitt Romney is he sticks to his themes. And you're correct. This goes back to the primary, and I don't think it's going to change going into November.
Well, but I'm describing something that, to my mind, is actually deeply dishonest. And I'm sort of surprised at how Romney has been able to sort of whine and with indignation say that what Obama's saying about his taxes and about his tenure at Bain Capital is beneath the presidency. I mean, I don't see anybody, you know, fighting back by saying to Romney, well, you're using distortions and manipulating statements is deeply dishonest. I mean, in other words, I don't know how the pot gets away with calling the kettle black.
Well, that's true. To be fair, we've seen this before in other campaigns, not from Mitt Romney, but from other candidates. You know, you remember back in 2008 when Joe the Plumber made his famous appearance, and in discussions about where President Obama stood on taxes, they started to call him essentially a socialist. I mean, that language actually entered into the lexicon of the campaign. And obviously, you know, Barack Obama is far from a socialist. He's a, you know, in many ways a Bill Clinton era Democrat on economic policy, but it stuck. The word got out there. The idea got out there, and then really since his presidency, there's been a contingent of Republicans certainly that have been able to make these claims, even though they have little to do with reality, they have little to do with President Obama's record. That's the political world we live in right now. So you can do that. You can then accuse your opponent of distortions. I think there is a atmosphere in the current media age where people don't know what's up and down, what's left or right, and it gives politicians a lot of room to just throw charges out there, and they stick or they at least confuse the electorate. And it's a dangerous kind of political game. It's certainly not a productive atmosphere to have debates about these big issues.
So I suppose, Julian Zelizer, given the current polls, for you would think that Obama having, or at least I guess Romney got himself in this position, but Obama's clearly taking advantage of the fact that in terms of Romney's tenure at Bain, he either lied to the American people or lied to the SEC, and also the extent to which the Obama campaign are running ads. I believe they're resuming them fairly soon. So they took a bit of a hiatus because of the shooting in Aurora, Colorado. But these new ads basically say that that the reason that Romney won't release his taxes is that in one or more years, he didn't pay any taxes at all, or very little. And I assume they must have some information that they're basing it on. I believe the candidate, Romney, gave 23 years of tax returns to the McCain campaign. And my understanding is that... Well, do you think there's any reason why McCain didn't choose Romney back then? Obviously, he made a pretty poor choice in Sarah Palin.
He did, but it is, you know, very hard to speculate what McCain's thought was. You know, this image of a flip-flopper was at the time seen as very damaging. Romney's record in Massachusetts was seen as damaging. His inability to connect with the Republican base was seen as damaging. There are a lot of reasons out there beyond tax returns to see why a McCain might have gone and did go in a different direction. So I don't know what's in the tax returns. It could be there's some embarrassing information, some questionable information, or it could be, you know, this is a case of where, you know, candidates get stuck on a position involving themselves and their defense and stonewalling turns into something bigger than they intended. I don't know, and I don't know why McCain did it, but certainly if this recent few days doesn't just turn media direction in the media in another direction, it's something that Romney's going to have to resolve, or this will be the story for weeks on end.
Well, the point, though, that I find fascinating, Julian Zelizer, is that in spite of what seems to be a fairly damaging narrative, and I assume it will return shortly, and he'll be back on the hot seat, Romney will, about his taxes and his tenure at Bain, that apparently, according to the latest CBS New York Times polls, particularly in Virginia, it's not making any difference. So I guess maybe there's an alternative universe out there that, you know, the Beltway punditry.
Well, there is. I mean, yeah. Look, this is an election where you have a handful of states is going to decide the outcome. Both candidates are pouring an enormous amount of resources into those states. And certainly the White House is unhappy that with this barrage of attacks, with a lot of damaging information, really able to shift attention toward Romney's record. You're right, the polls are not moving very much. Is there an alternative universe? Yes, that is the Republican universe is not being swayed at this point by these attacks, and certainly their anger and animosity toward Obama can be greater than what they see as some of the flaws in Mitt Romney's record. I'm not sure they're all convinced that something illegal happened. Many of them are buying Mitt Romney's defense, which is this is the free market, and that's clearly how the Republicans want to change the narrative. This is an attack on standard market practices. But what we do know is what you just said. The polls are not moving, and the administration ultimately has to be careful. These kinds of attacks sometimes don't bear the fruit, and they move the president away from touting his own agenda and talking to the country about what he wants to do. So there are some risks for the president, especially if the polls don't move.
So, but in your article at CNN, Julian Zelizer, Campaign 2012, The Phony War of Markets versus Government, you lay out a very, very clear case that going back to FDR, the Democrats have been very, very pro-capitalist. I mean, arguably, Franklin Delano Roosevelt rescued capitalism from itself, even though he was vilified by a lot of the capitalists of the day. I mean, assuming that facts and history and reality matters in this debate, walk us through the brief history going from FDR to the present that makes it very clear that Democratic presidents in the modern era have all been very, very pro-capitalist.
Yeah, that's a standard history lesson. FDR, his goal was not to destroy capitalism or even really to transform it. It was to save it. And FDR believed that without government, without protecting workers, without allowing people to unionize and providing a base of economic security, that ultimately that was a greater risk to capitalism than anything else you could do. Lyndon Johnson, with his programs, he also was very determined to bring more people into the capitalist system, not to somehow destroy it. The war on poverty, the goal was to make people self-sufficient and independent economic actors so that they could enjoy the amazing economic growth of that period. And then since then, Democrats moved very much to the center, where all of a sudden Lyndon Johnson and FDR looked much more to the left. So Jimmy Carter talked about deficit reduction. He was the champion of deregulation. Bill Clinton supported globalism and bringing the market to more people as the solution to many of our problems. And so the Democrats really, mainstream Democrats have never been anti-market. They've never been anti-capitalism, and it's just the opposite. The whole argument was that some level of government intervention was necessary to create the strongest capitalist system possible. So it's a false argument, and it works on the campaign trail, but it has really little to do with the history that you can quickly see.
Well, I think you can add to that, Julian Salazar, that Bill Clinton, who of course presided over the end of the Glass-Steagall Act that had served the country well since the Depression, and we know the results of that, the financialization of American capitalism, of course, is an issue in itself. And do you think that Obama can make that distinction between the new financialization of capitalism, where close to half of the economy now is controlled by Wall Street? They don't really produce anything except profits for themselves. They extract wealth. They don't create wealth, by and large. And, what I think most of our ideas of capitalism come from the early era, surely.
It's an attractive argument, and obviously the argument that we support the parts of capitalism that produce products that bring the greatest amount of wealth to the greatest portion of the population, rather than a financially based economy where a few people get a lot of the wealth and the kinds of services that are offered are really about making money. That's a tough argument to make on the campaign trail. It lacks a certain clarity, especially when people are primarily concerned about jobs. And I think the president is having a little trouble gaining traction with that. Also, his own record with Wall Street is not one that's very adversarial, despite all the rhetoric. And I think people who are savvy enough to follow politics know that Obama's been supported by a lot of these financial industry titans. The Wall Street, for a long time, did very well for Obama. And so the campaign finance system itself, I think, undercuts some of Obama's ability to make an argument that's already difficult to make.
Well, just in closing, though, the current argument is basically the Romney campaign have taken Obama's remarks about how government infrastructure actually helped businesses succeed. They didn't do it on their own. And that's turned into Obama attacking capitalists, saying that they don't deserve to be successful on their own. Clearly not what he said and not what he thinks. But that is, I think, one version of how a government and capitalists interact. And the other way that you can look at capitalism from the Republican point of view is that they seem to see government as a huge piggy bank that you can raid, agribusiness, the military-industrial complex. The most outrageous one of all, of course, is the for-profit colleges, which simply take government money and charge it back to poor, unsuspecting students at usurious rates and give them worthless diplomas. And that costs the Treasury $40 billion a year. And you turn on your TV set, all you see is advertisements for these new colleges, and by the way, the advertisements that you're watching, that's your tax dollars at work. So there's plenty of examples of how government and industry work together, and some of them, actually, you could make a strong critique about the worst form of government private interaction?
The history of government and markets interacting goes beyond FDR. And some of the examples you're giving you could find in the 19th century. The development of our information system came through the mail. A lot of our roads that were essential to merchants were constructed with government funds and often through government workers. So there is this collaboration. It's a history that liberals until the 70s were very proud about. The TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority, was always a great model of how this kind of partnership should work. I think Obama needs to make that case. Look, his record is the stimulus in terms of the economy, and then he's still calling for these kinds of partnerships. And he has to talk about this. He has to talk about how the Internet comes out of government research projects, not just private market research projects. The examples are all over the place, but I do think the president's had some trouble getting that out. And he certainly had trouble responding when the words are twisted and turned into an attack on the free market. So I think this is the debate that we're going to have in the next few months, and part of this will be who can make a more aggressive case about what the nature of this relationship is.
Specifically, Romney came at the president over these distorted remarks, or these remarks that used out of context, by saying that, according to Romney, that the president's basically saying that Steve Jobs didn't deserve to be successful. And the truth of the matter is that Steve Jobs, the first computer he ever saw, was at a government lab. And, of course, the Internet was created through DARPA, through government funds. So what about making this case then that, you know, traditional welfare in the European social democracy context is pretty hard to find here in the United States, but there's lots of examples of what you could arguably call right-wing welfare, military...
I think, obviously I don't think Obama wants to say it in a negative light, meaning if he says that, he'll probably just fuel some of the arguments and anger of the right. I think what he needs to make is a positive case about what the government has done to strengthen the nation's economy. And instances such as an Apple, even if it's distorted, he has to come back to that. But he certainly has to map out what does he want to do in the next 4 years and what's government's role going to be in revitalizing the U.S. economy, and talk about that kind of partnership. That is the case he has to make. And as much as Romney distorts it, he has to respond back in aggressive fashion. And I think as much as he's tempted to say there's all kinds of businesses that benefit from government, or just look at TARP as the ultimate government bailout, he also has to spin a positive story, and that will help him to make the case that, you know, he doesn't lack an economic vision. He doesn't lack an answer to the economic crisis the country's facing. Whether he can do that, I have no idea. But that's clearly going to be one of the big challenges in the next few months.
Well, Julian Zelizer, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Julian Zelizer, a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He's a regular contributor to CNN and Politico, and has written for The New York Times and The Washington Post. His most recent books include Jimmy Carter, Arsenal of Democracy, The Presidency of George W. Bush, and his latest is Governing America, The Revival of Political History. He has an article at CNN, Campaign 2012, The Phony War of Markets versus Government. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with Gar Alperovitz about nationalizing the Wall Street banks. And you know that there's a place in the sun for all that you've done, for you and your children. Yeah, you and your